Hello, I'm Marshall.
And I'm Stephen.
Welcome to Emissaries of Prophets, the bi-weekly show where we discuss the political economy of the Federation outpost in the Bajoran sector of the Alpha Quadrant. In other words, we discuss how decisions get made, how opportunities are distributed, conflicts resolved, and who gets screwed over. Spoilers, it's usually the Bajorans. That's right, we're talking about Deep Space Nine, every episode in varying level of detail.
And today we are very happy to be joined by a fellow podcaster, and really, I mean, really, he's more than a fellow podcaster. He's a broadcast journalist and a critical analyst of all things pop, cultural, and political. Welcome, Leslie Lee.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm happy, very happy to be here. If any of your listeners don't know, I'm the host of Struggle Session. You can find it at patreon.com/strugglesession. We talk about the intersection of politics and pop culture. We've done quite a few Star Trek episodes in the past. We did a little mini series. We're big fans of Trek and analyzing it. I'm very happy to be here because we actually have not done a Deep Space Nine episode yet because my co-host Jack is doing, he was going to watch a few of it, but now he's watching Star Trek entirely from the beginning, original series.
Oh my God. and
the cartoons. He got done with the cartoons. He's watching the movies and Next Generation in order of release, like you would have if you were a Star Wars nerd at the time. It's quite exciting for him, but it will be a while before he gets to DS9. So I'm excited to talk.
He's got like 30 years of material to plow through before he gets to that point. So, all right.
I have always said to people, like, I recommend strongly that when you're watching Star Trek, to interweave the Deep Space Nine and the Next Generation as they come out, because there's enough crossover episodes between them, you know, in the last one or two seasons of Next Generation. And I'm like, it pays off. It's worth it.
Even the one we're watching now has a little bit of a Voyager cameo in it.
It does, yes. Very brief cameo.
Tuvok.
Woo!
Yes, we were neglectful not to mention that we talked in the last episode about how pilot season happened and Deep Space Nine was on a break for a month. The reason, one of the reasons it was on the hiatus is because Voyager's pilot was deployed at this time in 1995. Yeah. Anyway, you preempted all the things I was going to say about you, Leslie. Anyway, it's a great show. Struggle Session is fantastic. He's also really great as a regular contributor on the Katie Halper Show. And
thank you.
Yeah, I shouldn't talk. Wait, should I talk about your book or no?
It's a bit early. I'm still writing it. Still in the pre stages. It is going to be a book about. I guess it's worth talking about because we're talking about Star Trek and what Star Trek originally has always kind of been about. It's like, yes, of space fantasy stories, it's swashbuckling tales, it's all this stuff, but mostly it tries to be about something. And I found as a writer watching, you know, the average Deep Space Nine or Next Generation, it's just fundamentally has something more to say than any average TV show today. Like every episode is about some issue that they're trying to explore. Doesn't mean that they're exploring it in a way that's necessarily satisfactory to me. No, but it is an exploration of something, some idea. Like every time it felt like when they were at the writer's room, they didn't sit down and say, what aliens are we going to have in this one? It's what, you know, moral quandary can we put Riker in today?
Does the crystalline entity have a right to live, even though it eats planets? You know, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
And as a writer and trying to write these stories, like that's my main approach, to not just start with not just do the adventure tale. Even though I love that, I might start off with, you know, oh, wouldn't it be cool if there was, you know, this scene where this thing happens. And a lot of writers start off with that, with just these images. But some of the best writers, Alan Moore talks about this. He might start off with, like, he mentioned this in for Swamp Thing. There's a scene in the early issues of Swamp Thing where he's using the text, and then the last word in the text boxes they use is actually on a billboard. And he came up with the idea while, you know, just driving on the highway and seeing billboards like that. And that's just a cool visual he came up with. But when he was writing the story, after he got that visual, he made the story about, you know, I forget what that one in particular was, but it was like a political morality tale, even though he did have that cool image. So I think a lot of writers are taught to kind of come up with the cool characters, come up with the cool images, come up with the cool set pieces. But you actually have that, like, unless you have an idea, a point you want to get across or explore, you might as well not write it. And that's something we talked about on Struggle Session, because we are doing the Alan Moore podcast miniseries where we dived into his writing technique. And I think his writing technique would have served him well on a Star Trek series. Too bad it never happened. But hey, it's not too late necessarily.
Can you imagine Ronald Moore? And I don't know. I don't know how that would go. Anyway, yeah, cool. Okay, so we start off the show with a little bit of history. So we are in April of 1995. And again, of course, events happening in April 1995 are not really shaping the show, but I bring it up anyway.
It shapes how we view them and how we interpret. And in certain ways, that is the show. Our show isn't... The show isn't the, like, images we're watching. It's like our memories of them and how they exist in the culture. So actually, you're actually perfectly correct in this.
Well, thank you. That's very kind of you to say. So I do want to bring up, I don't want to talk about it in great detail. I've been mentioning this every episode, and this will probably be the last time until we're ready to, like, until I feel it's really affecting the text of Deep Space Nine. But the O.J. Simpson trial is ongoing right now. So this is prime O.J.
This is a wild episode to be airing during the O.J. Simpson trial. Are we going to get into it later?
I'd be happy to circle back to that. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, we'll have to circle back to this one, because is just an episode about a badass black dude sleeping with white women. And I think this airing during the O.J. Simpson trial would have made a lot of people feel some kind of way.
Yeah, absolutely. So this
probably
is
true.
At this point, I think if you're a television viewer in 1995, you've been hearing about this. I mean, the trial just started last month, but you've been hearing about this for a year, pretty much nonstop. Like, there's the, you know, there's so much drama even leading up to the trial. Like, before they even get to arraignment, like, he drives around in a car with a gun to his head at one point and tries to visit Nicole Brown's grave. Like he's got this new girlfriend, and she goes on like Barbara Walters in the end of 1994.
I forgot about that.
Like, it's the whole thing, like the whole spectacle of it, and everything, the psychosexual mindfuck that is the voyeurism of all of this is entering its second year at this point. But the trial, I will say, is kind of just getting rolling, and we're beginning to meet the lawyers. You know, a young Alan Dershowitz.
Classic Dersh.
I mean, he's very
getting
litigious.
Somebody off for murder. Classic Dersh. Classic Dersh.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, he was his and so the signature style that he developed with Klaus von Bülow and failed to deploy in the case of Mike Tyson is really being honed at this particular point in time. But I do also want to follow up on something I said last time. Events in Kazakhstan continue to unfold as their constitutional crisis continues. I will say I didn't really look into it much before last episode, but I will say that now I see it. It's very much like Nur-Sultan Nara. I'm going to butcher the pronunciation of this. Nazarbayev, who is the president of Kazakhstan, is in 1995, you're just replicating Yeltsin's 1993 like putsch strategy, right? And this works. This works very well for him. And it's, you know, I think it's why the term constitutional crisis gets evoked. It goes off, and Kazakhstan essentially remains in the 1995 political consensus to this present day. And I don't know if it's as interesting or eventful as I may have initially thought. But I will recuse myself from opining further on Central Asian politics, because Afghanistan is the grave of empire. Kazakhstan is the grave of political explainers.
Nur-Sultan was a big supporter of Yeltsin, hey?
Yeah, they're buddies.
Like he maintained leadership in Kazakhstan, and then like supported Yeltsin even as Yeltsin was like facing a coup of his own, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah, I think they're, his fatherland party is like, you know, kind of very much of the Russian unity bent.
Yeah.
Sure. I'm still not clear on how like the Cossack neoliberal transformation happened. But anyway, that's it's very difficult to get into.
Did you know that the capital of Kazakhstan, they changed the name to Nur-Sultan just in the last year of the first president? Just a little tidbit there for you.
Excellent. So in the spirit of the Maoist struggle session, for which your show is named, Leslie, I want to start off with some self-criticism, some real talk. Because I'm going to say I have maybe in the past judged the Mirror Universe too harshly. And I'm ready to review this episode without prejudice, because and largely because when I saw Bashir get punched in the face by Sisko, I was like, you know, I'm into this. I like it.
When you offered this, I immediately jumped to the Mirror Universe episode just because I think they're just so fun, and you get to see the characters be the actors, I should say, play these completely different characters, these completely different ways. I mean, my God, Captain Sisko and regular Captain Sisko, the most finest, most upstanding black man you're ever gonna see. If you like respectability politics, there's very little to complain about with Sisko. Not that that's what he's about, but you know, he has a very positive black, he's a very positive black portrayal, a positive portrayal of black fatherhood. The Mirror Universe Sisko is a piece of shit. He is your jackass uncle who can't keep his eyes to himself, can't keep his hands to himself, has to try to get with every woman he meets, and then he treats them like garbage. He's an absolute piece of garbage. Now, it's actually kind of surprising to me to see Avery Brooks in the prior episode, in the first Mirror episode. It's actually really shocking how he acts, because he does like kind of tropey blackish thing. Now it perfectly fits, because we have, you know, hundreds of other episodes of Sisko being his own person, his own character, but he played, you know, the type of character he might have had to play in the 70s before he got big, and before they started having black people play human beings on TV shows. Like, that's what the Mirror Universe Sisko is, but it's fun, and everybody's a piece of garbage in it. They're all like creeps and predators, and they're all like fucked up liars. That's why the Mirror Universe ultimately works, because it doesn't just reverse a couple things. It basically just reverses almost everything. It's almost like the DC Comics, Grant Morrison's Earth 2, I think.
Yeah.
He proposed this idea. Yeah. He proposed this idea that in Earth 2, in DC Earth 1, good always prevails. That's a fundamental metaphysical law in that world. In Earth 2, evil always wins, and it's a metaphysical law in both those worlds. And so the Mirror Universe operates in basically the same way, where just everything that's cool and progressive and hip and upstanding and noble about regular Star Trek world is just completely inverted. And there's no, like, escape. There's no, like, alternative, at least from what I remember. There's like the Mirror Universe, like, there's no fixing the Mirror Universe, which is kind of the thing, I think, what Grant Morrison says in Earth 2. There's just no fixing it, because the rules of the universe are set a certain way.
Yeah, I think Discovery pushes back on that, but
I don't think so, but for Avery Brooks, according to the like Deep Space Nine companion book, Avery Brooks, when he read the script, was like super stoked about it, because it's the first time that Ben has sex in almost 3 years.
Yep.
So he's like, yes, it's about time. Like,
I mean, it's kind of strange. I mean, because of course he was known for playing the Hulk, and you know, this kind of badass character, and he plays a much more noble character. I mean, and let's be real, you know, Kirk had sex. Maybe Riker was more the that dude, the horny dude in Next Generation. So I was very happy with how horny ultimately this episode was, and it actually surpasses like almost anything else in Star Trek. In
they make it explicit.
Explicit that straight up Sisko has sex with Dax, and you know it's a big deal. It's a black man and a white woman. You didn't really see that a lot on TV. Now there's 20 years of racial politics since then that makes us realize that maybe that's not the high watermark achievement of progress that we thought it was in the 90s, but by God, we did think it was in the 90s. It was actually pretty cool, and it was different to see. And man, you mentioning this happening during OJ, that really strikes me as interesting. And I would love to see, I wish there was Twitter back then. I would love to see some of these comments.
Yeah, so we may as well jump into, I guess, concisely summarizing this episode, which is, again, you know, it's a Mirror Universe episode. Sisko's on the bridge one day, and O'Brien and Quark walk in and kidnap him at gunpoint, and he's very confused. He's then taken to the Mirror Universe, because I guess people can, you know, travel to the Mirror Universe like they might go to, you know, any dining establishment.
You just punched the right keys on the transporter. It was an accident at first. I mean, I guess it makes sense. It was an accident at first, and then they learned from it so they could do it again. Okay.
We know that O'Brien can invent new science on demand.
Yeah, anytime he needs to.
That's true. Like, I should say it is O'Brien, so it's not like, and just anyone can do this. But yes, so Mirror Universe O'Brien, aka Smiley, needs Sisko, because the Mirror Universe Sisko, that swashbuckling adventurer, recently died. But
which is kind of sad, because he was really an interesting and fun character. And seeing Avery Brooks just lean into the scumminess of it was fun. We got to see Sisko kind of do it too, but you could always tell he wasn't always, you know, he never got to the same level as Mirror Sisko.
In the previous Mirror Universe episode, there's that scene in the bar where Sisko like comes in and he like jumps over the table and kind of did like a butt slide over it. And like, you know,
yes,
waggles up and just like, oh my God. Yes.
So much fun. He was having so much fun.
Yeah. So anyway, so they're kidnapped. They need him because they've got an operation coming up where they're going to try and get a alliance scientist. Alliance being the alliance between the Bajorans, the Cardassians, and the Klingons against the Terrans or humans. To get a scientist, a collaborationist scientist who is a human, who's building a communications array that will expose the Terran Rebellion's fragile communications network. And it turns out
Star Wars is the plot of New Hope.
Yeah. Yeah. Help me.
It really is.
Help me, Benjamin Sisko. You're my only hope. It turns out that scientist is the Mirror Universe version of Ben's wife, Jennifer, who he's also married to. In the Mirror Universe, I guess?
Yes.
Are there exes married?
That part was a little bit of a stretch. I think it worked out. But, I mean, come on, because they already established in the last episode that Sisko had a thing with Kira in the Mirror Universe. So out of nowhere, he's married to Jennifer this whole time. And also with Dax, too. But, I mean, it works. It works. Syndicated television. You know, you just have some fun out there. Yes, he has an ex-wife and a mistress and an ex-mistress. Yes.
Yeah. He plays the field. He's Polly. Yes. So Ben needs to play the part of his mirror self and convinces everyone he's a real bastard. For the most part, he's pretty successful. He sleeps with Dax and Kira possibly on the same day. I don't know, Marshall. We weren't sure how much time passed. Ben and Smiley are captured on their way to rescue Jennifer, or rescue her, extract her. But it turns out that was the plan all along for them to get caught. So they Ocean's 11 it, and Ben sneaks out to talk to Jennifer while Miles wreaks sabotage with the computer. When the time is right, Sisko and Jennifer run for it. And Smiley does a prison break of a bunch of Terran workers, most of whom are gunned down. It's very sad. We don't think about it. And everything is going to plan until they get to their escape vessel and they find Rom, their pilot and faux trader, pinned to the wall with like, what is he on? Is it like, it doesn't look like a knife.
I thought it was just a dagger.
Yeah, but it's like
yeah, it
square.
Was kind of hard to tell.
And I was like, what kind of knife went through like the door of this airlock? Like,
yeah.
Probably you should reinforce your airlocks so that somebody can't just like put a knife through them. That's an essential life saving device right there.
Well, we do have some concerns about Cardassian engineering after the last episodes where they're like, 2% failure rate? That's fine. All right. Fortunately, Ben knows the station better than anyone because he's been on it for almost 3 years. So Marshall raised a very good point.
I'm very curious how long Kira has been the intendant on Deep Space Nine, because it's like, oh, Ben, he knows the station, no problem. I'm like, well, Kira has also been on this station, and the Cardassians that have been on the station built the station. You'd think they would know something.
Well, he used a super unoverridable override is what we're supposed to more or less believe, which I think is maybe fair to say that Commander Sisko would be the, well, on Deep Space.
I mean, Kira in our universe, too.
Yeah, if in yeah, so yeah,
he just
I guess
changed
no.
the code ahead of her. So
he changed the code ahead of her. Okay,
yeah. He put the code in, and then he was like, now, computer, change the code. Ha, 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 sneaky. Which does make sense. But also, like, they were able to, like, evade all of the Cardassians by using, like, you know, the back routes. And you're like, okay, but, like,
come on.
They also know this place.
It speaks to Kira's management style.
I mean, honestly, I have to, on the grade of syndicated TV, I actually got to give this one, like, that plot point, I just gotta give it that a pass. It's like just on the edge of rolling your eyes, but not really, especially for, I mean, because you're just moving along. It's 45 minutes. Let's go. Let's have some fights. Let's have some shootouts. And kind of like,
it's true. I'm nitpicking.
Yeah. But see, we know we're nitpicking. You know, we know we're nitpicking. So it's not a problem. Yeah. Oh, but what I did want to say about the attendant, though, Kira is distractingly like just I used this term when I was describing The Sopranos when I was watching it. I said all of the women Sopranos have a sexual energy that is dangerous, like is destructive. It like consumes you every time you see the show, and that is the level that Kira Nerys is on as the attendant. I can't even explain. And like Mirror Universe Sisko was almost there whenever he was with her, he was basically there too. But Jesus Christ, it was like completely cold. I think this was the most erotic thing I've ever seen in Star Trek.
I call it big Caligula energy. Like,
yes,
Kira is a Caligula type degenerate, which I think I think this episode walks it back considerably from the
oh yeah yeah this was a little bit
yeah she's more vulnerable
yeah, this
she's
a little bit less.
Yeah, when she's a little bit more vulnerable with Sisko, like, he can kind of push back on her. Like, he can kind of, like, she's like, I won't kill you yet, and she's going to be all tough. But she really likes him, you know? She's not just like, I'm just going to use you and throw you away. Like, the danger gets turned down a little bit.
Yeah, you can tell she actually genuinely likes him. Now she's going to kill him, but she's going to have her fun first.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and she'll feel bad about it later.
Yeah.
Make no mistake. Yeah, so anyway, so they do dueling self-destruct codes with Kira, but Sisko has locked her out, and she didn't set up two-step verification through her phone. So Sisko holds the station hostage.
Happens.
And they escape.
I realized today, a couple of days ago, when my partner cracked your screen, if you crack the screen on your phone and you don't have money to fix it, your life is over if you have two-factor authentication. Yeah. I didn't realize that. I would tell anybody, if you have two-factor authentication, you don't have a regular balance of $300, I would suggest turning it off if you could possibly, because you're just not going to be able to get into your... Google is actually the worst one, because if you use Google Authenticator, there's no way to get into it unless you can get into that particular phone.
Yeah.
Even no matter what happened. So avoid using Google Authenticator if possible. Print out those stupid codes. I might be saving a life right now just on this podcast. Because it terrifies. It absolutely terrifies.
I was helping. So there was a wildfire where we live, and I was helping some people who were escaping the wildfire. And they were from a very far north remote indigenous community, and many of them had phone problems, and they couldn't get into their email, so they couldn't actually use the government website to get their funds. Like there was emergency funds for them, and they couldn't actually get it because they were locked out of their email because Google had detected they were in a new place, and it was like, fuck you, I'm locking you out. And these are people who mostly had precarious pay as you go phones.
Yeah.
And they were screwed.
And this is supposed to be for our safety. Every time I turn on my fucking computer, I gotta log back into three fucking apps I always have running that only play video games. And if someone in Russia hacks it, none of that shit's gonna stop it. They're not gonna steal my physical computer and log in. They're just gonna buy my account off the black net where it probably already is.
In the end, there's a, Cisco gets a heartfelt conversation with the Mirror Universe Jennifer. He heals a little bit. She looks to her new future, and Smiley gets put in charge of the rebellion. And nothing changes for the DS9 crew at large, really.
Yeah. Yeah. What I found interesting is another show with another captain would have dwelt on this idea of maybe Cisco would stay with Jennifer. That's not even a consideration here. He's it'll be nice to meet her and hang out a little bit, but I have to get back to my ship, my job, actually. I have other stuff to do than talk to my dead wife. Sorry, I'm actually have adjusted to the fact that she has passed away. I have another life in the Alpha Quadrant. I'm just going to go.
He's space dad, and he's been away for a few days now. He's got a lot to clean up when he gets home, right?
There's a rager. So much shit. Quark's has brought some fucking virus onto the DS9 or something.
But Latinum.
Now that I think about it, so Next Generation leaned really heavily on the space virus, but I actually don't think there were too many episodes in DS9 that did it, because it would be a lot fucking scarier because people just live on DS9.
There was one, and almost everyone died.
Season one. I might not remember Cardassian. Now. I have to check it out. But I would it's a lot. That's strange, because just the fact that DS9 is stationary, even though the Enterprise is a big ship. The space viruses don't seem as scary because the ship is moving. It's such a silly thing, but it's you're going to fix that in one episode. But it feels like when shit happens on DS9, it just seems more real, more permanent, because it's
I think TNG
is we can quarantine and go to a medical facility and they'll take care of us. DS9, they were we can quarantine and hope that we don't all die before.
Oh yeah,
we're all
we can't go anywhere. That's it. Yeah.
When they have ships coming and going, so one of the things is when they're under quarantine, one of the ships demands to leave.
Ah, yeah.
Right. So they actually have to make a hard call on what to do about people who won't comply with quarantine.
Yeah, and
can't imagine what that's like.
And it has a much it feels like waiter. I just thinking back to the first episode of DS9 where it is made very clear that Kira is not part of the Federation, does not like it, does not share their belief system, neither does Odo and some of the other several other people. This is not a Federation space. They're mostly visitors here. And so if there's a space virus on the Next Generation and the Glorpons want to take off and leave, it's a very judgmental, you can't leave, sir. You can't possibly do that. That would be violating protocol and duty. DS9, you can't pull that crap. It's all these different races have just as much of a voice as the Federation, in fact, more so, because the Federation are just visitors.
Deep Space Nine belongs to Bajor. I mean, although arguably it's a U.S. military base abroad type situation.
It's like a Guantanamo base situation.
I was going to say like Qatar Air Base, but yeah, the principle's the same. At least the royal family of Qatar wants the U.S. there, unlike Guantanamo. All right. So yeah. So now I guess it's just like we kind of go into freeform discussion about this. We got a couple of themes we've identified. Marshall, you want to kick us off?
Yeah. So I mean, these were just some things that I, as I was going through, I noticed them, and I was like, oh, these are kind of interesting. Jadzia, Dax. When Ben is in the mirror universe, he sees her and he refers to her as Dax. But Dax as her name is actually like the name of the symbiote inside of her, right? Like she's Jadzia somebody, and then when she got the worm, she became Jadzia yes. Dax. So that means in the mirror universe, she also got the worm Dax.
Yes.
And I was like, well, how did that happen? Right?
Well,
like,
I think I know how it happened. They have that actress under contract. And so that's basically it. They paid her to show up and she has to play the same character because she's the same person. I mean, that's kind of, I'm not being facetious. Like that's, yeah, you're absolutely right to nitpick. That doesn't make any sense at all, but all these same people end up in the same place. And I do think other TV shows actually do a better job of this sometimes, like in the mirror universe, like, you know, two or three of the people will already be dead. A villain will be working with someone. They do some of that here, but I think Star Trek just gets a little bit more caught up in having so much of the main cast there that it makes you question, like, how did this all end up exactly the same way? In fact, there's a Next Generation comic book. It was supposed to be an ongoing thing, but it was a one issue. It's like this Elseworlds thing where the Romulans are the ones who make first contact and they take over Earth.
Oh, neat.
And it's like it's basically like Mad Max. Like all the Terrans are enslaved, but they're stuck on Earth. They haven't even gone to space yet because the Vulcans won't let them. Yeah. Like it's their first time going up in space during the comic. But like every single castmate member of the Next Generation ends up there more or less the same as they, you know, came in. And so, I mean, I actually don't think they had Wesley, but that's a fun thing. But the reason that happened is because they wanted people to buy a Next Generation comic. So they had to have all the same characters. I've seen stuff, you know, be a little bit bolder and like actually say, if we're doing an alternate take, we're doing a fucking alternate take. But I think Star Trek kind of plays it close to the vest with this stuff.
I think, you know, in some ways they could have just said he calls her Dax and she says, I'm not Dax. I don't have a worm.
Oh, yeah.
I never got
yeah.
one.
Yeah. You could definitely
know,
have
and
that.
She could just be Jadzia.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And you know, so I don't know. This is, it gets to the heart of like my problem with the mirror universe that I watched the mirror universe and I'm kind of like, well, this was just a bit lazy on the part of the writers, right? They're like, I want to do something different and fun. Let's just put it in the mirror universe and then we don't have to think about anything, right? We have all of the characters who are pretty much like a lot of their main characteristics remain the same, right? Like Ben is still, he's a strong leader and a good fighter. And
well,
super
actually, we're told he's not a good leader, but he's a good fighter in this one. He just had the fighting mostly.
But he was the captain still, right?
And so your critiques are actually like 100% accurate and 100% fair, but I still like it. Like this is lazy and I love it. This is like them saying, I want to do a fucking Star Wars and that's it. I'm going to do a Star Wars episode and that's it.
I'm just going to do it
and that's fine. And I think that maybe this is just a tradition and the Next Generation is like, oh, we're doing, we don't want to work this hard this week. Why don't we do a mirror episode? I'm sure that they have like a little bucket a little hat with notes with, you know, different types of episodes written on it. And when they don't have any ideas or they don't feel like working, they just pull out of the hat and it's like, all right, oh, mirror episode. We don't have to do shit. We'll just steal a plot from some genre movie, put the characters in there, and that's it.
I wasn't sure. I can't remember any TNG episodes that did the mirror universe.
Someone is screaming at their computer because they had. It's like, die! It's die!
I know, right? If it's true, they're screaming at us right now. I have not seen every Next Generation. In fact, I don't think I had seen this episode before. So this was a real treat for me. I thought I had, but then when I watched it, I didn't remember any of the plot. So this was a real treat. I'm looking. I don't think Next Generation.
No, they didn't. Yeah, it was the original series started it, and Next Generation, they were just like, we are not touching that. Not
that's
us.
So funny, because I mean, I think that's good, but they did so much goofier episodes. So I hope it wasn't like a judgmental thing. It was more like, we can't put a hat on a hat. Like, we can't do all this stuff and also do Mirror Universe. That would just, we cannot have Picard in a goatee.
That's what I'm going to say. What does Mirror Universe Picard look like?
Yeah.
What does he do? Coca-Cola, cold.
I mean, I feel like he would be very similar to Mirror Sisko, because he is, I mean, they're very similar characters, even though they seem superficially different. I feel like they have kind of a similar core, like, how do I put this? They believe they're both the same guy, even though they're not the same guy. Like, Sisko is willing to bend a lot of rules, Picard isn't, but if you ask them what their beliefs are, they would basically say duty, you know, family. Maybe Sisko would say family first, and maybe Picard would, you know, put duty first. But they're not, I mean, they're both Starfleet captains. They're not super different. So if I do imagine alternate take of Picard, and we have seen there's episodes where we get a different glimpse of when he's younger. He's like the episode where he has to where he's transported into the past by Q. And he's kind of like a dirtbag. He's kind of like a bad. He's more like a Kirk guy. And we also get like a bit more Kirkish out of Sisko when he's in the Mirror Universe. But, you know, like just swashbuckling. Yeah. I think they will probably go with that, because if you're going to make a captain that goes a little bad, like, can you? How many captains are there that don't just fall into the pattern of swashbuckler anytime you give them a little bit of edge? There's like Han Solo. There's fucking Jack Sparrow. There's like, can you name a captain that I'm trying to think of an archetype of a captain that isn't more or less Mirrorverse Sisko, Mirrorverse Kirk, that you could go to? What would that be like?
Yeah, I don't. Folks,
please email. What do you have email for fan submissions? What are we failing? Is there a Mirror Universe Picard concept that we're not seeing? Because all I see is him like baring his chest like he usually does, like he often does when he wants to be a little sexy, and like making eyes at all the crew and like just being a little bit, you know, lecherous. I think a Mirror Universe Picard would be more lecherous, while Sisko is just kind of horny, and the, you know, he's coming on to women mostly that are into him. I feel like Picard would be more like a Biden or Cuomo. Picard, Mirror Universe Italian? Picard is like a Cuomo. Italian. Yes,
I'm not a sex Picard offender. I'm an Italian. He said, yeah.
He would not be French. He would be Italian. Yes, we have solved it. Yes.
But he would definitely like make comments to Beverly about like, why don't you dress more like Troy here?
He could be a Patrick Bateman American Psycho, like, you know, same cool calm demeanor as Picard, but he just makes these really cutting and biting, nasty, catty remarks like, never wear that again, Beverly. Like shit like that.
And inside he's melting down about business cards or like,
yes.
My God, did you see how shiny his communicator badge was? What the fuck?
Oh, Bateman Picard. I think we've done it. You don't have, folks, forget what I said earlier. We don't need to process this anymore. Bateman Picard, that is the Mirror Universe. We got it.
Here's a question for you. How did the Mirror Universe Deep Space Nine station get the Federation computer voice?
Oh my god.
What was the sequence of events that got there that Majel Barrett was doing the voice on?
That's so funny. And that really is a good thing, but I feel like a modern TV show would get that, but forget to have fun. The fun stuff.
Yes.
They would 100% make sure to change the voice on the computer, but they wouldn't have like Cisco and Dax like have sex, you know, like that just wouldn't, that's not what would happen. They wouldn't have the fun stuff, but they would think about the world buildings. Like, how do we put,
like canon is perfect here. Like, totally consistent, but yeah, boring.
Yeah, I think you're right. World building has in many respects come to supplant story. And it's in some many ways tragic.
Yeah. Yes.
My favorite thing was the badge that all of the Terrans had to wear. This like giant globe chest. But it only showed like North America and South America. And I was like, I guess that's the Earth, but like you could show more. That thing was huge. You could have fit the whole planet on it.
It could have had different designs. I mean, I assume this is made by their enslavers, so I guess they didn't care. And maybe there's like global animus on Earth, so all Terrans aren't Terrans if you're on a certain hemisphere, like now, you know.
What?
Certain privileges.
They do speak to that in the sense that his wife, Jennifer, is from like a higher caste family.
Yeah, yes.
I.e. North like American. So they do speak to that.
Maybe that's what it is. It's like if you looked carefully at everyone's badge, you would see like, oh, they have Asia on their badge. We don't talk to them.
Oh, yeah. That could be like that could be
rotate.
I don't know.
Globe.
Yeah. Depending on what degrees are showing, you can tell how their station, what their station
this,
in life
this
is.
This one's a Belarusian ore processor.
I really like the, just speaking of the costumes, I think the costume design, as it is in all Star Trek, it's kind of up and down, but I think there's some pretty good costumes. Like, again, Kira's costume is absolutely
the cat
suit, ridiculous. Absolutely astonishing costume. I do like the Terran costumes. I wish the Cardassians had gotten a little bit more, but I understand, you know, there's only so much time, but they just use
tradition
uniforms. But I think mostly... They put a lot of effort into making the Mirror Universe just feel different. Everybody dresses different. Like there's this, you get the sense that like, I don't know, because usually when you see humans in Star Trek, they're all wearing uniforms and they're all united together. And I guess we're supposed to get that. Like, well, most of the characters are wearing uniforms, but this, like everybody, even the Resistance, they don't have uniforms. They're all like a ragtag bunch that doesn't really have it together. So it was a little bit different like dynamic with the with the scenes with the characters where they're all meeting and talking. I really like did that. I wish they had like more cameos of different Star Trek characters instead of just Tuvok. I feel like you could have dropped like even like a TOS character in there at that point to show what a motley crew this is from amongst the universe. And you also could have had if this was a comic book, they would have had like villains in this, right? Like in the Justice League where the Joker is like with Batman's team, like they would have had it like a little mix up. I wish they would have had a little bit more. I am just ranting because I'm looking at the show and just I'm sorry. I just love this show a lot. I watched this as a kid a lot, and just I really love it. Even flaws and all, there's just something really special about it. And even the bad costumes, like there was effort put into making it different, making something new. And every time I watch it now, I just see how much effort is in this, in each of these little episodes that weren't shot for very much money. And it just seems like so much richer and more real than like the $180 million Suicide Squad I just watched, which feels just like a cartoon with some people calling in on Skype half the time. Like, that, like in comparison to a Deep Space Nine, what feels like real people in real places doing real stuff.
They did really good with the lighting on this one, too, where it's like it felt like a different place.
Yeah.
You know, like it's the same station, but there's like there was more red light and there was smoke.
It was darker. It was like a nightclub vibe.
This is like an evil version for sure.
I wonder why Kira like wants to. Yeah, when did they install the smoke machine?
Well, no, it's like a fact. Everyone in the Mirror Universe is more photosensitive. Like that's like just one of the differences. Or humans.
That's just how it is.
It's a plot point in.
That's true. In
oh,
Discovery.
Really? Oh, okay. That makes a little bit of sense. I like that retroactive. I like that kind of continuity where you just retroactively make something goofy make sense somehow. But yeah, I'm looking at the scene where Kira makes her debut, and there's just smoke billowing behind her for no reason. Like all the doors have these neon red lights. It looks kind of cyberpunky. I wouldn't like a whole. You could. I mean, I hate to even put this out into the universe. I really hate to say this, but if you were doing like a Mirror Universe cyberpunk, like Kirk or Resistance shit, people would be down with it. I know Discovery kind of went in that direction a little bit, but I think you could really lean into it if you wanted to.
I mean, the closest we're ever going to get to a transmetropolitan movie is like is the Mirror Universe Picard episode, where he's a cyberpunk journalist. It's the only way we'll get Patrick Stewart a Spider Jerusalem.
And I think, you know, there's a lot of these, you know, these episodes, these types of Star Trek episodes. Obviously, Mirror Universe is one type. How do you compare? Now, I know the Mirror Universe raises a lot of believability questions because when everybody ends up in the same place. But is it more or less, you know, satisfying to watch a Mirror episode than, say, a holodeck episode where they always have to come up with these convoluted reasons for why, like, the video game they're playing matters? I think DS9 is a little bit better in this because they have more B-plots and stuff and B-plots and C-plots and stuff than, like, the Next Generation. But sometimes the Next Generation would just be, like, all in the holodeck. Why you care? So both these things have issues. So which is the one that makes you change the channel if it's on, right? Because I feel like we, and not as a mean way, this is for most of your listeners, when you change the channel, that's when you used to pick up the remote and press the button to put it on another station. Not because you hated the show that was on or you didn't like it, but just because it was like, oh, this is an episode, this is a Riker episode, I don't really like Riker, I'm going to watch something else, because you didn't need to watch every episode to understand continuity one at the other. And there were DS9 episodes where first 5 minutes saying, oh, this is about so-and-so, I'm not going to watch it. So Mirror Universe or holodeck episode, are you which is making you pick up that clicker first?
Can I say nothing makes me more infuriated in Star Trek than Moriarty breaks out of the holodeck. Like, I'm sorry. No,
it's so sad because he's giving like such a wonderful performance and trying to talk about these real issues. But at the end of the day, it's like, that's like a video game character. That's Free Guy. That's the new Ryan Reynolds movie. Free Guy is literally this.
Yes. I mean, the Mirror Universe does have the benefit of while we can't see it, there are billions of people who face the consequences of what's going on. Whereas the holodeck, when they finally get out and say computer terminate program, it's all gone.
Yeah, Prez Pro music plays and that's it.
Badgie is gone.
That's the end of Badgie.
I'm sure that will never come back.
You Stephen had something you wanted to talk about, the like aesthetics.
Yeah,
of
on aesthetic. No, I just want to say dystopia. Seeing. Is the actor who plays Dax, Terry Farrell, is that her name?
Yes.
Yeah. Seeing her in a different haircut than the one she's normally in made me realize how her haircut normally in that show is a fucking crime. It looks so, like, seeing her different haircut, I was like, wow. Like, I don't know what when they do her hair in the ponytail with it all bunched up, I don't know what it is, but it just does something to her face. I don't know. But she looks like a whole different person when you get rid of that hairdo.
I feel like I like to point out, but it does, this hairstyle makes her feel more like, it's kind of like a lead. Like the lead actress has this hairstyle, while, you know, the ponytail puts you back. You're not the lead if you have a ponytail. Mm-hmm. I feel like this is a weird thing, but I think if you looked at like images of TV shows, they're like she has like a Rachel cut kind of in this one, which is just like more like more intense, something like more like Kira has, where the, you know, the pullback ponytail, I don't think it looks bad, but it is like, it doesn't stand out or make her, it doesn't seem like a TV, like a bombast, you know, TV, like, you know, TV actors, you usually like stand out. I don't know if
it makes, her more
sense,
subdued, but... and I think less sexual in a way.
I think it, I think like, yeah, and this was more of like, I don't know if you can describe a haircut as romantic, but it seemed like it's what you're used to seeing, and that's kind of what the context is. It's like when you see this Dax, you don't see her as, you know, on the bridge, you know, pressing buttons. She's like, you know, this woman who has lost her lover, who's this freedom fighter that she's come to believe in, and she's trying to reconnect with him. And it's just a very different type of Dax that you see. And it makes you more immediately maybe connect with her. Because I think actually Dax might be the one of the DS9 characters that would most fit on the Next Generation. Because I think most of the DS9 characters, they're not these straight-laced people. Maybe that's why I'm sorry if I flubbed it earlier, but that's kind of what I was saying. She's not like a straight-laced Starfleet officer anymore, even though she never really is that. But at work, I guess she is. I'm not being fair to Des. Yeah, she does. Yeah. She switches. She code switches. I'm sorry. I was being unfair to Dax, but she code switches very regularly. I'm realizing
she is all business at work. And then she gets off duty and she goes and gambles
fuck
and
people
fucks
up,
weird alien.
And she's a fucking I'm so sorry. I flubbed that for Dax. But yes, when she's at work, she's the very TNG. Ish, and this haircut says, no, this is a different Dax. This is one that's having fun adventures. Absolutely. And falling in love.
Yeah, when she lets her hair down, it's like she lets
her
hair
it's
down.
Yes, it's literal in the
back,
show. Exactly. Like. So you were absolutely right to notice the ponytail, because they use it in the show that whenever she lets her hair down, then she becomes this other Dax.
Well, so clearly the Alliance is a political dystopia, authoritarianism or whatever. How do we know this? Like, how is the public instructed to think about like a bad society, right? Like, how do we know the Alliance is bad? So obviously I think like there's like, it's dark and it's smoky and cyberpunky. How else do we know it's like bad?
I think this is the same question you could probably ask about A New Hope, and it would be the same. And then I've asked this question about Star Wars: A New Hope. How do you know the Empire is bad? Because they hunt terrorists. like that's the only thing you know. Basically, they hunt they hunt down terrorists. That's why they're bad. Not
enemies.
Yeah, they hunt down their political. Like, look, sure, the Death Star, obviously an escalation of a certain extent, but we don't know how dangerous those rebels are going in. And I mean, this is you don't know why. Well, I guess they have slavery. That's the main thing. But I mean, slavery is the main thing. But like, you also have like humans. There's slavery in Star Trek too, and other parts of Star Trek. So, is slavery happened to Terrans, who should be this great galactic spanning empire, and that's why we know it's so bad.
Right. Well, and who are we concerned?
It's like slavery's bad, but it's extra bad when it happens to us, right?
Yes, it's so funny. It is funny how they can so casually play it with Sisko being a black man. It's like, yeah, I used to be a slave, and now I'm like a cool badass now. So what? Like, he doesn't have the old character didn't have any pathos. And I think if you were making this show now, you couldn't just say like slavery. They enslave all the humans and kind of just breeze past that as kind of like a generic villainous thing. You would have to get into historical slavery in some way, instead of just showing a couple of scenes of people being sweaty as they hit like rocks. Like that's the extent of slavery that as we understand it here. There's not talk of chattel slavery and generational bondage and all this other stuff. They're like, this is not beloved, you know. This is just, you know, kind of, this is sci-fi slavery. And so I guess slavery is the answer to why the empire, why yeah. this alliance is bad. But I don't really think they really earn it. If you would take, you could take those scenes out and still do the same episode, and it wouldn't really feel any different because it really is just kind of like an adventure, right? It's like yeah. The Empire is yeah. bad. We have to take them down, and that's it. Like it's not really concerned about like
the. There's also the weird sex stuff.
And sex. That's what it is. This is about sex, violence, and a little bit of spy heist stuff too. A little bit like a planning and plotting. But it's not really about like what life is like under this empire. It just uses this easiest thing. Oh, they've enslaved humans. That's the easiest way in any sci-fi show to say somebody is bad. They've enslaved humanity, and that's it. But that doesn't really say anything yep. about like politics or anything. We just assume like why, like it does. Because what I was thinking is like, how is it worth it to enslave humans for the mirror universe, but not in the real universe, like the Cardassians, yeah. Like, how did the economics of this? They enslaved the Bajorans, I assume, because there were some resources on that planet that they wanted. But they have like these Terrans out on around Bajor too. Am I confused about the locations, or is that right?
No, you got it right. I don't think there's an economic case for enslaving the Terrans, but there's a social case for it that. The Terrans had gone out, you know, and terrorized the galaxy.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Killed a bunch of people, and they had their empire. And when it got overthrown, they enslaved the Terrans as like a, ha-ha, revenge, we get
and
you
now. And that's just serial movie fun. That's just sci-fi fun. I don't know if you can get anything about the real world from that, but that's fucking awesome. I love that explanation. That's actually really cool. Sorry for being too mean to the show.
The thing I do want to say is, if your measure for a bad society is sexual degeneracy amongst the leadership, and incarcerated labor force, the United yes. States meets that criteria.
Right? Like, yes. Yes. But of course, going back to Star Wars, the Empire is America. George Lucas has stated this: the Empire was meant to be America. You can watch a clip on YouTube of him talking yeah. to James Cameron about it. And James Cameron does not get it at all. George Lucas. I love James Cameron. He's a great filmmaker, but Lucas is just like is a little bit more with it when it comes to politics, a lot more with it when it comes to politics, even though I think Cameron has some like great anti-imperialist stuff in like say Avatar, and he's always like making cops the villains in his movies, but he's more like I don't like bullies, you know, kind of guy. And while George Lucas is like explicitly, I don't know if this is how he feels now that he's a billionaire, but he was explicitly like anti-Vietnam and anti-imperialism, and he wanted the rebels to be, you know, the Vietnamese fighters versus the American Empire. And that's what that's why Return of the Jedi, the Ewoks are using, you know, guerrilla tactics. He's explicit about this. So again, back to the Star Wars parallel, I think that also applies here, where like, yes, the Empire in this is just like America, and we've we've enslaved the Terran for, they lost the war and we've enslaved them. And that's it. It's just, it's America. You're absolutely right about that. I don't know how much more you get out of it, because Sisko sees this empire and is like, yeah, I gotta get back to work.
Well, I think our read on the show is everyone is America. So the Federation is America, the Cardassians yeah. are America.
It's America.
and it's all like the different perspectives of it.
Different types of America. This is our mirror universe. America is like ugly America.
Yeah,
Trump's America, maybe.
Well, I mean, remarkably, I think in the way that how the U.S. sees itself. Yeah, that the Trump years were some sort of exceptional.
Yes,
circumstance.
Some exception. Yes, these are the Trump years. Yeah, the mirror universe are the Trump era, thank God Cisco was just able to escape and not change anything.
Thank God we punched in the teleporter codes and now we're back to main timeline America.
Back at brunch. Yeah. Cisco was just trying to get back to brunch. The whole episode he's trying to get back to brunch.
I think one of the big things in this, one of the big historical events that's shaping a lot of the political discourse this time is South Africa has, apartheid has fallen. In 1993 to 1994, right? Nelson Mandela became president less than a year ago in South Africa. So Nelson Mandela would have been coming to power around the time this episode was being written and produced. And so I think there's this interesting scene where Cisco and Jennifer are talking, and she's like, "I hate you. We're not getting back together." He's like, "Fine, I can't sell you on our relationship, but maybe I can sell you on a violent struggle against a racist apartheid." And she's like, "Yeah, I could fuck with that."
I'm down for sure.
Yeah, and that to me is so interesting. That, like, you know, compared to like that brief moment where like the arm struggle of the MK, the armed wing of the African National Congress in South Africa, was briefly like redeemed before it was like, oh, all armed struggle is terrorism and evil. You know, no, it was good in this one instance. And I think it's like an interesting like historical moment where people would on American primetime television be saying armed struggle against your oppressors is a noble endeavor. I haven't seen it before or since.
Well, I think that kind of that covers like everything on this episode. We've talked about it a lot, and there's always more, but.
One thing we should mention is that Kira, who is the terrorist who uses violence in the real universe, is the imperial, you know, officer in the mirror universe. So I think that's a little interesting. Like, she's the worst and most perverse of them. So I think that should be appreciated a little bit, like working with the Cardassians to enslave people. So I think that's a little, kind of a clever twist. Maybe we didn't give them enough credit. They did think about it a little bit. I remember when Battlestar Galactica was ending, they said that they picked the last four Cylons by the ones that it would personally hurt the most. And I think maybe that was a similar thinking with making Kira the attendant, I think is her name, the leader.
Intendant, yeah.
Intendant. This, you know, fascist. Well, I guess we're supposed to assume she's a fascist leader. I don't know if we really know, but when she was actually the freedom fighter who was willing to use violence, you know, to fight against the oppressors and was proud of it and, yeah, you know, has some pretty good scenes where she's like threatening to do it again if she has to.
Yeah, she'll blow up a bridge.
Yeah.
Well, Leslie, I want to thank you so much for giving us your time and talking to us about something we love, Deep Space Nine. So
thank you so much for having me. I had a blast.
Yeah, a lot of fun. Yeah. Awesome. I guess we can let you go now if you want. And then,
yeah. All right.
Unless you wanted to say anything about like you know, like a Twitter handle or like reiterate the show one more time or.
Oh yeah, please check us out. Yeah, please check us out. Struggle Session, patreon.com/strugglesession or sesh.plus or strugglesession.substack.com. We got tons and tons of great bonus episodes. You can also find us on your any other podcast app. And if you can't afford the bonus episodes, just send me a DM or email to thestrugglesession@gmail.com and we'll hook you up with that. Please check us out. Oh, and we have some new t-shirts, strugglesession.shop. Use code SESH for 10% off. Please check us out. Just a working podcaster. Please support. Hope you enjoy.
Awesome. Thanks again. If you want to find more about our show, we are on social media, Instagram and Twitter at Asset Droid. You can find us on Facebook. Just search Androids and Assets and you'll find our page. You can send us an email, info@androidsandassets.ca. So earlier in the episode, when we said, hey, send us an email, that's how you would go about doing that. Though, of course, you know, our DMs are open, so hit us up on the Twitter or wherever. We'll get us. Yeah, we'd love to hear from you.
So next time you find yourself whisked away to a mirror universe where everything is the perverse opposite, put us on, and maybe we can help you find a way to take advantage of your political, social, and economic circumstances.
Or at least we can nitpick about all of the things that should be different in your mirror universe that aren't.